affidavit deposition from Brenda Kressler. This began in Arizona in 2015. My husband, David Lee Kressler, was told he could not claim me on his taxes. They did not give him a choice to file jointly. The letter from the IRS said they did not recognize our California confidential marriage. We did this because I was a victim of attempted murder and a stalking, and for safety and legal reasons. They made David file single man taxes. He decided he was going to buy a house, and we determined he did not want to pay someone else's mortgage retirement. David purchased a house. My name was not accepted on the title, only David's. I was very sick, and I was dying myself. David was helping me with Nord's cyclic vomiting syndrome. He was my only help. I could not make decisions for myself. David bought the house, and we went into forbearance, and debt was starting to build up in 2022. In March of 2022, he sold the house, and we moved to Oklahoma. We knew he was sick from the diabetes and massive weight loss in 2020. We put our things in storage and stayed with my brother and his wife until we could find a house to settle in, and he could start seeing a doctor as soon as possible. We found a house in Waggoner, Oklahoma. He purchased another house that went in my name. It was run down house, but enough to fix up and flip so we could have money for the new house. I have EDS, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, a genetic disorder. We were referred to a EDS specialist, Dr. David Chorley, in Bixby, Oklahoma. Right away, he started testing us and did a workup. We liked and trusted him, so he became our primary care doctor. Both of our cases are on record. The diabetes and weight loss were enough to apply to disability for David. We were accepted into Oklahoma's Sooner Care and Medicaid. Dr. Chorley was setting up for tests. He was concerned about 5 moles on David's back. I don't remember the kind, but they were not good. We then went to the Social Security office in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and David applied for Social Security disability. We were concerned at this time, but not alarmed yet. The tests were set up as they found abnormal things. The gastroenterologist kept calling and sending letters to no avail to Dr. Kevin T. Fisher, a doctor who was going to do David's surgery. Dr. Fisher was on vacation 3 times. All we have are apologies, and that's it. We in turn called Dr. Chorley's office and told them what was going on. I had to do the calling to find out why Dr. Fisher was not able to be contacted. Dr. Chorley was concerned. The nurse at Dr. Fisher's office told me they didn't know Dr. Chorley was involved. I can tell you what I believe went on here. His PA apologized touchingly. We had an appointment with Dr. Fisher, and Dr. Fisher was nowhere to be found. We showed up to a darkened office. 2 people were at Dr. Fisher's office. They told us they were sorry, covering for Fisher, but also not happy either. They were in an empty office themselves. Meanwhile, David's weight is getting seriously low. As we had to call the Social Security office to find out what's going on with David's disability, David was already approved and cleared to have surgery. He was good until November of 2023. All pre-op testing, surgery, and hospital visit were all approved from the Oklahoma Health Authority. They were already planning to take David out at this time. They set up the doctors and all. David was covered and then let us know not to worry. We then went to the Social Security office and the caseworker. She informed David that by collecting Social Security disability, he was going to be collecting welfare. David said, "That's funny. I worked my whole life paying into Social Security, and I knew I would have the help when I needed when the time came." That time had came. She stayed adamant, then proceeded to tell me I was going to pay back $8,000 for the house David sold in Arizona. I told her no. I told her that we were married. My name was not on the title of the house. I was not recognized, and I was too sick to even care anymore. So she is now having the amount taken out every month to pay the debt. I am disabled. I had the opportunity to get on Davis Social Security, but I cannot now. Something didn't feel right. When we got upset, we asked her to bring a witness, her supervisor or co-worker, someone to hear what she was saying. She would not. The second time we went, she walked away 10 minutes later and then came back. The third time we saw her, she informed us once again what she was going to do. The caseworker informed us again about David collecting welfare. David said, "That's funny. I thought I worked my entire life paying into Social Security to this day." He was mad, entrusting millions of dollars of his and trusting Social Security, and said, "This ain't right." I asked her, "Does this mean you are taking our medical also?" "That's right, I am." She still would not call a witness. The caseworker took David's papers, showing all the credits he had earned in his lifetime of working. On the left side, there were numbers, big, black, bold numbers that read 5,000. This was where the caseworker messed up with numbers. Some discrepancies don't add up, so we filed a complaint against the worker under the Do Not Fear Act. The problem started when I started receiving letters from the Oklahoma Health Authority, sending me letters saying they were discontinuing my coverage for anxiety medication. They said 7 medications, making it sound like I was taking drugs, and I called for a hearing. I heard everything that Dr. Charlie had in mind. They were not happy that Dr. Fisher was not responding. I told Dr. Charlie about all the letters, maybe 5 or 6 of them. This is what Dr. Charlie's involvement was. I don't know what took place. They convinced him to do what they wanted, and he wouldn't have to worry about his career. This is where I noticed they were trying to overdose me to shirk responsibilities. They were trying to dismiss all drug testing, as I had a contract with the state of Oklahoma. They were hoping I would overdose. Ativan is a clean benzo. I took it for 7 years. NORD's rare cyclic vomiting syndrome. It's severe. I think he helped in surgery as well, guiding Dr. Fisher. Dr. Charlie gave David and me a warning about Dr. Fisher. We took it as a warning before David's surgery. He said Dr. Fisher and Dr. Charlie were at a birthday party for 10 little girls. They were all standing around. There was a man that started to have a heart attack. The guy fell to the ground. Dr. Charlie looks towards Fisher, and Fisher didn't attempt to make a move. He just stood there. So he went to help the man and performed CPR. He revived the man, and he was taken to the hospital. Dr. Charlie said he walked up to Dr. Fisher when the ambulance got there and asked Dr. Fisher why he didn't come to help, and Fisher told him, "You were doing it so I didn't think I was needed." Dr. Charlie was not smiling when he told me of his younger days and how he met Dr. Fisher. This is where Dr. Fisher is getting all his experience covering his life of killing and the Access Health Care Clinic in Sepulpa, Oklahoma. It is involved as well. They are dirty. After enough letters and worries, my coverage was to last until October, and then I'd have to renew it. So I called for a hearing. This hearing was to stop drug testing, as it was not considered a controlled substance. Dr. Charlie and I had had an agreement to test once a month. It was for NORD's rare cyclic vomiting syndrome. I would not eat, drink, sleep without it. I have a sleeping disorder. He also had me sign a contract with the state of Oklahoma to take no other drugs. The hearing was about this one medication. I take heart medicine, stomach medicine, and Reglan to stop violent attacks of severe nausea and vomiting. All my medications are safe and needed. The Oklahoma health authorities got their letter of my hearing dismissed by a judge in November of 2023, covering themselves. Towards the end of the last 2 months, my medication changed. As they were giving it to David, he was dying. Did they give him something else? They ended up going after Dr. Charlie, as he wouldn't comply at first. He continued to drug test me every month, so the letter stopped. Then they moved Dr. Charlie to the Sepulpa office in Tulsa, Oklahoma. About the same time David's surgery started. And David tried to get a COPD test before surgery. It was avoided at all cost. I told the nurses before the surgery, as well as all the doctors he had been seen before. He was at an emaciated state. He was very thin. The surgical hospital told David before the surgery, in a phone call, "You will be getting the old-fashioned surgery, not the robotics." We were not aware yet that David's Medicaid and Oklahoma's Sooner Care were taken away. He went in and prepared. We did not know Dr. Kevin T. Fisher was a holistic doctor and operated for bones and things like chiropractors do. He practices as a DO. I have videos and photos to show what went on. We had no idea how far the caseworkers' threats would go. It started with me. We knew that she was going after our medical coverage, and when we're both sick in a state, nobody would help us, hospitals or urgent cares. The day of the surgery was July 10th, 2023. He went in feeling okay and was nervous like me. Little did we know our lives were about to change. I took a picture of him being prepped for surgery till they took him. I went out to our car and waited. When I called and he was in the ICU, I came in to watch over him and protect him as I promised I would. He was not breathing well, and I had to wait until he woke up. I have a bad spine, so it was really hard to sleep on a couch. They never gave me a bed as promised. They encouraged me to stay with David the entire time. They would not feed me or give me a bed as well as showers as they promised, but this never happened. I would not leave my husband's side, but I started pacing. My husband was having breathing issues. He had bags of blood for transfusions on his stomach and tubes everywhere. But why was his breathing so off? Was he not getting enough oxygen? Things were intense. David wasn't sleeping too well. He was waking up. So I cleaned up and went to sleep, for I was tired. I got up as I heard the commotion. I asked what was going on. I went right to David. He grabbed hold of my shirt and said, "I'm going to die." I heard them say they were going to kill me. I said, "Okay, David, I heard you." And looked to the right, and Dr. Fisher was standing at the foot of the bed. He heard what David had said. He grabbed me away from my husband by my upper arm. Dr. Fisher pulled me to him and guided me out of the room. He led me to the waiting room and told me to wait there until he came back for me. He was going to save my husband's life. He went back to David, but he came back in 10 minutes and brought me back to David. I saw about 6 interns standing over David, shoving a ventilator down his throat. I woke up from lightly sleeping. An X-ray machine was at the foot of the bed. My daughter Sarah told me to address the fentanyl. She was with me on the phone to see what was going on. They were using fentanyl in IV, and I questioned it doing to his breathing. I took nursing and I observed and go by my medical scope. I knew after the first surgery they used a ventilator, I'm guessing with anesthesia and fentanyl. They came in, and the next day they had him back in surgery. Knowing he had cancer, Dr. Fisher told me that he removed over half his pancreas and did not tell me he left the cysts and tumors as well as removing David's spleen. The infection fighter, he lied. He never removed the pancreas, only the spleen to help fight cancer. They came in 2 different times asking me how long David had been an alcoholic, and I said David hasn't had a beer in over 28 years. He's not an alcoholic. Then another doctor came in and asked me the same thing and got the same answer, but said, "Do you think he may have been sneaking it without you knowing?" We have been by each other's side for over 28 years. I know he didn't drink. My husband has been clean since we were married. When he was a bachelor, I knew then they messed up his liver. They never told me David had a tumor on his liver, and we did not know he had cysts and a mass on his pancreas. This doctor never did anything but remove a body part that would help fight infection, the only organ that would help fight cancer, opening them up not only once, but twice. We all know that cancer is exposed to air, it spreads. They released him with an infection and sent him home with hospice that did nothing but drug him and take his life with poison and morphine. They were planning to blame me for his death. I received a letter, and it was unsubstantiated with no proof. My daughter witnessed it all. Dr. Fisher and his associates treated us badly, fed me for 9 days, and I was there for a month, living in fear for my life. I paced because I knew I was not safe. They used it in the intercom, as David informed me everything was said they're listening to. My car became my home office. I was in it for 1 month. How we were treated was bad. They cut David's Medicaid. It went from bad to worse. They said it was a money factor. Wouldn't tell us anything else. They treated us like we were beneath them. They treated us like beggars and poor. I don't drive, and we were like 15 or more miles away from our home. I depended on what they told me, and at first I wouldn't agree to stay a month. But then I did, and they hurt me and starved me, and it was a bad treatment. Medicaid was canceled. Medicaid has been evolved since it started. The caseworker at the bottom of all of us. Oklahoma health authorities sent me things and lied. I have it all. The judge knows they are involved. David was released from the Oklahoma Surgical Hospital on September 10th. He was released with no medications. Nothing. My daughter and my son showed up at the hospital, at the ICU. They were already saying that they were sending David to a hospice house. They all decided that they were taking it out of my hands, that I was unfit because I was having health problems of my own. And I have my age, and that I couldn't do it, the job, for my husband, take care of him, and sleep too. However, my son and daughter came in, and they can tell you what they saw in the ICU as well as what took place. They said it was a money factor, never mentioned Medicaid. They had no one to help us. My kids stopped them from taking David to the hospice house. My daughter was there to stay with him. So we took David home. They released him with a staph infection on his bottom. They also released him with an infection, and they took the tubes out for the spleen. He had a big infection when we arrived in West Virginia. They took him and found an infection about the size of my fist and a lump during the whole time. My daughter can tell you what happened when she experienced us doing hospice at home and what we went through, what they did. The social worker came in and she made Sarah and I leave my daughter. And I left the room and proceeded to ask David questions. We already had him off the medication. We took him off all drugs. He didn't want him for the scenes that he went through. He didn't want the drugs. They made him fall. They made him do everything he didn't want to do. He didn't even remember what he did. It was so bad. We had a newspaper clipping that shows after hospice before we took him out of state. She proceeded to ask him if he was agreeable to the do not resuscitate. I don't know if David signed anything, but David told me, no, I did not agree. I told her I did not agree. I wanted David to be resuscitated before we left the hospice. After these things took place, there for a whole month, and the things they put us through, the ambulance got him from the living room to the bedroom, to a broken bed, the wheelchair and the oxygen, broken down equipment, to tell us that when I asked about oxygen, how much oxygen? She said 3, and I said, what if that's too much oxygen? I know it causes brain damage. She just shrugged her shoulders. I knew. But I wanted to see her reaction to brain damage. She had no compassion. I've never seen this attitude. And a couple more of two young guys. Their attitudes were, let him die. They came to help him get into the living room, to the bed, in the bedroom, to keep him from falling. I always slept next to him. Even on a cot on the floor, he fell a few times. The drugs they were giving him. We stopped all drugs. They failed to do, just like they did in the Berkeley Healthcare Center, West Virginia, and drugged him into hallucinations. The day we were taking him from Oklahoma, we got a hold of Dr. Charlie. We had already seen the realtor, gave them our title and everything, and gave him the keys to be in charge. We weren't coming back. The realtor caused damage to our home, and it was like it was deliberately done. We talked to Dr. Charlie that same night when we were leaving on September 3rd, and he said, "Oh, guess what? I'm going back to Bixby office." He made it like a big surprise. "Dr. Charlie, that's good." "Guess what, Dr. Charlie?" I said, "We're leaving state. We're taking David out of state to save his life." He said, "Oh, that's good." I watched him. He was nervous. David agreed with me. He was nervous, under pressure. We deliberately planned to call to him and left right after, so there was no time for him to call and let Fisher know if he was involved with Fisher. Fisher kills for the state. We were not safe. He didn't know we would leave, and neither did Dr. Charlie. He saw me for a year crying for my husband and sick. David and I knew when Dr. Charlie was under pressure. David said he's being pressured. We both knew he was Fisher bait. Sarah was sitting with us, and then he grabbed his forehead like he was very nervous. He had to come up with four medicines to keep David alive until we got to West Virginia for help. Something was wrong. Right after he rubbed his forehead, the hospice people gave us nothing but a hard time when they came. It's from the Oklahoma Surgical Hospital. Fisher threw in like a nice gesture. Dr. Fisher made everything impossible and caused me much grief. My daughter took videos because I bathed my husband and I got my husband to bed. I also got sleep because my daughter was with me. I was able to rest even a little bit, but I was able to rest. We met the mayor to help fix the problem with the main water line. That was a complaint made to the hospice. We didn't know anyone there. They lied to us. They tried to take and say that I was going to be responsible for my husband's death. So my husband decided that we should leave the state and take him to West Virginia, where they could find help. My husband made the decision after we were in West Virginia for some time. We got a letter from the Oklahoma Health Authorities saying that they dismissed the case that I had regarding the medication I was getting. They got the judge's signature and they dismissed it, but they were involved. I called for the hearing and was present when my husband was being butchered, and they happened to retrieve three letters that was supposed to go to the lawyers, disability lawyers, and Tina Robinson. The paralegal went after them and got it right away. They sent me three encrypted letters. When I went to open them, there was nothing there. Google notified me, telling me there never were any letters sent. They told me it was the judge's decision, and when I never saw the letters. The same woman said a letter was coming from the judge in the mail. I never received any letter, and I contacted her by email again. She said they never sent the letter. The judge told them it would be done in court. This is when they thought, by getting the case dismissed, they would be off the hook. They knew I was coming after them. I made myself clear. They were involved. I didn't figure out it was Medicaid until I was searching, and I heard Medicaid is from Social Security. So I searched, and that's when I knew it was Medicaid fraud. They thought by dismissing the case, it would be covered up. Now this is where Dr. Charlie comes in. My daughter needs to come in with questions about what she saw, what she went through with the drugs, and that they had him on, what they did to him, what they did to us, taking David off the drugs and making the decision. David was able to come back and defend himself. The next case will go to the next affidavit, part 3, which is in West Virginia, where they ended his life. From Oklahoma to West Virginia, when making observations about a person's condition, which of the following senses are used? Remember, making observation using all four senses, sight, hearing, smell, and touch. All my nursing skills came out, and being sick all my life, I learned to observe. My medical nursing scope. What is the code of ethics for CNAs? As part of their professional code of ethics, CNAs acknowledged their responsibility to help ease patients' suffering and restore their health. They should consider all aspects for patients' quality of life, including their spiritual, emotional, and social well-being, along with their physical condition. July 18, 2018. What is the code of ethics for CNAs? As part of their professional code of ethics, CNAs acknowledge their responsibility to help ease patients' suffering and restore their health. They should consider all aspects of patients' quality of life, including their spiritual, emotional, and social well-being, along with their physical condition. July 18, 2018. I never seen them do anything. I watched them like men, down patient confidentiality. The nurse used a hand circle, their ears, saying Larry Hendrick was crazy. No, he was not. Same as David's friend, David Kinney. Kinney lost his life, and another Dave, to give him of what Dave went through after they gave him the wrong insulin injection over 4 times. Dragging him to be like all the patients. I found bad things in this hospital, so I'm going after them. I witnessed enough to know it was Medicaid fraud. Nurses vaping, and patients too. One went to the ER and couldn't breathe after receiving 3 hits. I saw the nurses vaping, and I have a face. She was with the vapor. They drugged the patient all the same time. They even had me escorted off the property by state police in a snowstorm. We were new to West Virginia, knowing no one. My son-in-law picked me up after he was off work. I was permitted to do this, but Melinda, the caseworker, had David's diagnosis stolen for her by an ambulance company named Jan Care, not Jen Care. I watched him take it after I told him not to. She was covering herself. Beckley Healthcare Center in Beckley, West Virginia, corrupted the records and doctors, killing patients not due to health issues. David went to the ER several times because they were drugging him, and he almost died when the ER got him. They caused him to miss 5 Glenn Larson Cancer Center appointments with Dr. Kanana and Physician Assistant Chris. His only hope was to live, and they took his life. I saw my husband go down in grief. He lost all hope. Dr. Nathan Fravor of Charleston CAMC Memorial Hospital in West Virginia saved his life when we first arrived. He told me everything after I told him what Fisher told me. He was grim. He made sure he got all the documents for me. Then Beckley Healthcare Center started taking him down. They even asked me to stop the ER and let him die in their care. David was checked at last. He had tests and CT scans, MRI, and hospice even came to the hospital. I had David removed from Beckley, as I knew they were trying to kill him. 6 months of hell here saving his life. They said he was not actively dying, and that he had 6 months or more to live. At this time, I had been searching for a malpractice lawyer, as I was told to do so. I contacted one who was on another case that was lost, but to see if he could help. He made it a point to tell my daughter to tell me to spend as much time with my husband as possible now. When my daughter told Fisher, he was not a state killer. They were good friends. He told her to tell me to hurry and file a wrongful death suit. This was from Fisher, I'm sure. David and I were found through Medicaid. They kept stopping it. He was accepted with mine for Aetna and Medicaid for West Virginia. Then I received a letter. He was not eligible. And they put him in the F wing of the hospital with the poor, the crazy, and the filthy. Mold, loose toilets, and sinks. Sharing a bathroom with females. No privacy. Half body in wheelchairs in the hallway. He was put where he caught COVID. Still had the staph infection and fever. I had a run-in with a nurse for the same reason. Matthew, my grandson, was with me. This was the first time. I knew Melinda, the caseworker, was behind it. They did not want me there. Dave made videos about the way he was being treated. He said he wanted to be resuscitated, and he said he did not want to be drugged. They knew at Charleston CAMC Hospital he was to be autopsied if he died. I did stop the ventilator, but not resuscitating him, at least once. Sarah was there, and David told her, "Thank you for being there," and telling me they were livid and angry. Hospice cleared him as well as test. They said 6 months or longer. They put him to sleep in an end-of-life comfort medicine. Not to kill him, they said he had back pain. Beckley Healthcare Center said he had brain cancer. No, he did not. Also, the Charleston Hospital used a DNR from Oklahoma, and it was not even necessary. They killed him by euthanizing him. I saw it all, and I even warned them not to kill him. He's a victim of a crime. If you do it, it will be murder. They still did it. They also got the information on his death certificate wrong. Important details, too, like the time of death. They refused to autopsy David. And now we are wondering what they did. But I had three witnesses there, and with Dave, when David was on his deathbed, I knew something felt wrong. But I was not in the right place to be yelling and arguing. I went down and smoked a little General Stores hemp cigarette, as I won't touch tobacco if I can help it, to calm me down. The hemp cigarettes do smell, but I go off property. It's legal, so it's not wrong. I went back up, then mentioned something, but I had a spray. I have step-by-step photos. I talked to David on 29th of January, and we even had a video of him there. He spoke to me, but was weak. After coming from Beckley Healthcare Center nursing facility, David spoke to me up until January 2024. He never answered his phone, stopping using his alarm, and they drugged him. When I saw him, he was dehydrated and not eating. They came in and shot in his IV a syringe filled of end-of-life drug, telling me it was only for the back pain. They're liars. I waited and saw Dr. Olga McDaniels come in and give his time of death. David never saw the coroner. He got the time wrong on David's death certificate. He put it at PM. It was in the AM that David died. He said David died, from pancreatic cancer. No, he did not. They injected him and went out and closed the door on me. Within a couple of hours, David was dead. Three witnesses saw it. One was a criminal lawyer in Canada. She ended up having a stroke. Khalilah Ali, my little brother, Ronald Leslie Kressler, and Robert J. Coronel. Myself. My husband squirmed, and he suffered. For about 10 minutes, he held my hand and squeezed it, like his sister did to me when she passed. He let go, and I knew he was gone. The lines on the monitor. Looks like he is still alive. They are not completely flat. I have my husband's death pictures to show he suffered from July 2023 till February 1, 2024. I have a watcher, and I've had one for over 3 months. The last time I saw the watcher, he followed me to my grandson's home from the store. Here in the mountains, he stopped, however, at the property line. It was raining, and he had his lights on. I parked the car, failed my arms, and flagged him to come and talk to me. Whatever he was doing, he was following me with a UPS truck that had been cruising the neighborhood. I was watching from my window in the back the whole day. When this happened, the UPS came out of nowhere, parked the truck in the driveway of the neighbors and my daughter's property. I did not get out of the car. I did not do anything. I just sat there and gave the truck enough time to back up and turn around and leave. And then he went up behind him. I believe that the UPS driver, or whoever was in the truck, did this. I had one before that on the back street here, and then one about 3 months ago, when my daughter recognized it first. And then I started realizing I saw the same man, and I confronted him again at 10 p.m. at my grandson's, with me going to the store. Whatever they were doing, they were watching the property, and he had somebody with him because they were doing something on the property, he heard, and tried to follow me. I sped the car up and got away as fast as I could, and I saw that truck again, but I believed it was an F-150 truck. And it was a newer model, and I believe those are the kinds of trucks that Fisher buys. However, not all these trucks. There have been three of them. And if I don't believe, they're the F-150s. They are new trucks, and I believe Fisher is in one of those who's watching me. My husband is right now, and has been since he passed away on February 1st, 2024, at 5:46 a.m., not p.m. He's lying in a morgue right now awaiting toxicology and an autopsy for murder. They're not doing anything yet. Well, they're still investigating now because of the Oklahoma jury. I got a hold of the Attorney General, Gentner Drummond, of West Virginia. My husband's body is not being cremated, and they never gave anything like that. He's being buried, and his body is awaiting an autopsy for murder. I don't think that I should have to pay for that when they did this to my husband.